Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Simon Lambert today is Lee Boyce and Helen Crane. And coming up, well, what else is there? We have a new government. Labour have swept into power after 14 years out. But what financial challenges face our new leader? And what does the party have in store for our money? We assess what we know already, what could be on the cards, and with speculation about inheritance and capital gains tax raids, VAT for school fees, and plenty more, we tell you how you can prepare. Don't forget to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
I'm Lisa Kaplan from Charles Stanley Direct. I've spent 15 years helping people understand their finances with clear, jargon-free language. People often ask me whether they have enough to retire, what to do about inheritance tax, or how best to invest. Often, it's a simple question that one of my expert team can answer straight away, and we would love to help you too. Contact us for a free 15-minute chat at coaching@charles-stanley.co.uk. Investment involves risk.
But first, we have a new party in power. Labour romped to victory in the general election, overturning their worst result in almost a century last time we went to the polls in 2019. Boris Johnson won a victory that was meant to keep him in power for a decade. But here we are. The Tories beaten and beleaguered. But as we always say, this is not a politics show. This is, of course, a finance show, and that is what we will be focusing on. Welcome to you all. If, dear listener, you're wondering why this is sounding absolutely crystal clear and beautiful, that's because, for the first time in about 800 years, we are in a studio. It's a dawn of a new age of podcasting. Is it a dawn of a new age, though, in politics, Simon, and for our finances? Not a big surprise, as I said, but just give us an outline of the victory. Big majority. What does that mean? But in terms of pushing through reforms and agendas and changes, is it just going to be a breeze?
An outline of the majority and the win. Thumping, I think,
yes,
should be the word. A thumping great majority, a thumping great win, which, if you look at it in terms of the turnaround from the last election that we covered on this podcast in 2019, is really quite astonishing. It's not astonishing in the sense that this is the most widely expected piece of news for a long time. There were no surprises there. Markets have reacted in a pretty sanguine manner. Pounds up ever so slightly. FTSE's up ever so slightly. But if ever you could talk about something being priced in, it was the election result that literally everybody was expecting. I personally did not stay up all night watching it on the basis that I had to get up very early this morning. And I knew pretty much what the result was going to be. And that wasn't true last time round, the Boris Johnson election. And this is actually our third election of this podcast. Three elections and one Brexit vote.
Wow.
Is the count. It feels like a lot more because we've actually had quite a lot more prime ministers than we've had elections. But all of those ones were a kind of what could happen, who could get in, what could happen next. Whereas we knew what was going to happen this time round. What happens next is the big question. Labour have laid out what they plan to do, but they've played a very, very safe and cautious game. It's been a solid Gareth Southgate, England performance of a campaign,
hasn't it?
From Labour, but without the bit where they look like they're going to lose it right at the end, and then astonishingly we don't.
And no spectacular Jude Bellingham kick to save us, absolutely no. This was a...
None of that.
No.
Didn't need it, didn't happen. If they stick by what's in the manifesto, not a huge amount is really going to change. Stability, I guess that would be good. And also, it's where are we going to get the growth from that they're promising us? And we're going to talk about that in a bit. But they've talked about planning, they've talked about housing, they've talked about green energy. But what was lacking was any form of real creative vision of how we are going to get Britain back on the up. And the stuff in the manifesto is not going to do that. And whilst they have promised not to raise the headline rates of number of taxes, they are probably going to keep taking money off us through stealth tax and fiscal drag. And everyone is just waiting for the taxes that they didn't mention that we suspect they're going to raise on us.
Well, I will dig into all of those things in more detail. But Helen, were you eagerly staying up all night looking at the results coming in?
I did actually manage it until about 1:30 in the morning. Don't really know why. I mean, I'm not a huge politics nuts. I just like being involved in things. Just, you know, if I
was journalist.
Like, yeah, exactly. Mm. I just, you know, fear of missing out, I guess. So I was, watching Channel 4, watching Anne Widdecombe, watching Nadine Dorries storm off. It's all very exciting, you know, from a drama perspective.
I mean, but was it, though, Lee? Was it exciting? Or was it a bit, in terms of the general mood? I mean, it might have been for us because we're journalists and, you know. But in terms of the general mood of it, it was a bit Gareth Southgate, England, meh, you know. You think, OK, change. It's been 14 years. The Conservatives, let's be honest, we'll talk about their legacy in a minute, but sort of limped off quite badly at the end there, I think, you know. But what's replacing it is not, you know.
It's been quite an uninspiring general election, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah. Your voice says it all, Lee.
There's one word, change. That's all it took for Labour Party to, you know, get a majority. That is the most simple, basic general.
We're general not them.
You know, it's just change. That's all they needed, right? And, you know, I didn't stay up all that late last night because I kind of, you know, thought the result was baked in. But I think I'm a stats man. Yeah. You know that, Georgie. And what I'm fascinated by elections is all of the swings. And I think the visuals these days on TV where they show you which seats are going, different colours and all that kind of thing. I find it really, really, that's the bit I find the most interesting. So Labour, 1.6% more share of the votes this time round, but plus 200 seats. I mean, that's massive.
Yeah, yeah.
Lib Dems, 0.6% more votes, 63, it might be more than that because there's a few more seats to count before we finish this podcast, but that's massive. And then someone like the SNP lost 1.3% and lost 38 seats. Those kind of stats to me are fascinating. But I think that, going back to your original bit, you know, has it captured the attention of the nation? Well, it's not been the greatest turnout, has it? So kind of hard to sort of argue that it has been. It feels like we kind of knew the result the day Rishi Sunak was out in the rain saying there's going to be a snap election in July.
Well, I suppose it's a bit meh for lots of different reasons. But one of them is, look, we are in a bit of a... How do we put it? We're not in the greatest position, are we? You know, the inbox for Sir Keir must be pretty full right now. What are the biggest challenges facing the government, Simon, when it comes to, I suppose, the finances? Because you said growth there, that's got to be on the agenda. What would he be looking at?
Well, so the problem in terms of the UK's finances is that we are stuck in this seeming doom loop of low growth and not quite stagnation, but, you know, we're not that far away from it. We don't appear to be going anywhere. We have the highest tax burden since 1948, which the keen-eared amongst you may notice happened to come just after the Second World War, which was a major event and triggered a rather large tax burden. We've obviously had COVID, but, you know, Second World War, COVID, can you compare the two? Who knows? So we've got this very, very high tax burden. But that's been achieved by the Tories at the same time as taxing the wealthier or higher earners more, and middle earners are actually paying less tax. We talked about that on a podcast a few weeks ago. So the way the tax system is structured, you probably can't take that much more off those high earners. You're starting to, you know, the pips started to squeak some time ago, and there's a lot of complaint. People feel they're being treated very unfairly. We'll come on to lots of that stuff. And you probably need to broaden the tax base at the same time as our public services have been getting worse. Nothing works properly, from the roads to the NHS, you know. So it's that thing where we're taking lots of money off people, we're spending lots of money, but things aren't getting better. What are you going to do about it? The IFS has been quite damning, said, they talked about this conspiracy of silence where the parties are not admitting that, you know, we cannot... What the Tories and Labour said in their manifestos and what they've said about what they'll do with the fiscal rules and stuff, the two things don't match up without substantial spending cuts or tax rises, which is where the whole what taxes are they really going to raise comes from. But I also think that there is something underlying this that we need to look at, which is that Labour, in, I've got the manifesto here, our fiscal rules are non-negotiable and will apply to every decision taken by a Labour government. This means that the current budget must move into balance so that day-to-day costs are met by revenues and debt must be falling as a share of the economy by the fifth year of the forecast. This is what is tying the Labour Party's hands. It's what's been tying the Conservative Party's hands. It's what lies behind so many decisions to not fix stuff in the system that we probably need to fix or spend money that we probably need to spend. Now, you can't just tear that stuff up and do whatever you want. I think we explored that with the Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng budget, and it didn't work out that well. But these are not hard and fast economic rules that govern everything that you must do. They were invented as recently as that they came from Jeremy Hunt, and he's not been the Chancellor that long. Now, we could change these.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to change your own rules. Jeremy Hunt, you know, could have changed them, could have fudged them. Probably not good in the aftermath of the Truss Kwasi Kwarteng thing. But I would say that Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves could probably tweak these if they wanted to. They could give themselves a bit more headroom. And that could mean that they could possibly achieve what they need to do without having their hands tied quite so much. But I think fundamentally what we need to get is the economy growing again and the economy stepping up a gear. And the question is, how do you do that? And have they got, as I referred to a few minutes ago, the creative vision and the ability to do that? Competent and stable government would be a very, very good start.
Yeah.
But can they deliver the rest of the stuff?
Well, Lee, is there an overarching sort of plan for the economy that you could kind of lay out for us from Labour that they've got, that this is how we're going to get to where we want to go? Before we start digging into the little details and how they might raise a bit of taxes here or do this a bit here, is there this overarching theme?
Not really, George,
Okay.
The manifesto was quite light on the economic and financial detail outside of, you know, not rising certain taxes. It's not completely clear how they plan to fund a lot of what needs to be spent. And the thing is, Keir Starmer is going to have to come into office with an inbox overflowing and lots of problems and headaches and things to sort out. But in terms of an overarching economic theme, I don't think it was particularly strong, the manifesto, on that front, nor did it really need to be. Boiling it back down to that change, you know, they just needed to do nothing bonkers in the run-up to the general election to get into power. That is the long and short of it, really.
Yeah.
You know, it was very light on what's going to change in terms of the economy. And the other thing is, I mean, we can have a small cheer in here, but as far as I'm aware, there's no plans for a budget. You know, I measure time in budgets. Simon measures time in how many elections.
Small cheer in here. Get out of town. You love a budget.
But there's no immediate plans for a budget as far as I read into it, which suggests it's a kind of carrying on the same course to where we're at the moment from what the Tories have, you know, until we hear otherwise.
Yeah.
There wasn't a huge amount in there.
Well, talking of Sir Keir's inbox then, Helen, all of you, I'm going to ask all of you, what should be a priority? If you could make your pitch to Sir Keir and say, put this one at the top, if you would, what would it be, Helen?
For me, I would say housing crisis. You know, this is something that is not going away. You know, houses are just getting more and more expensive, especially now with mortgage rates being so high. I think, you know, people struggling to get on the housing ladder, to move when they're already on the housing ladder, to get in the houses that they need to live in, to live their life in the way they want to, is becoming just more and more difficult. And I think, you know, Labour has been talking about this growth agenda, and I think, you know, that's part of that, building more houses. They've claimed they're going to build 300,000 houses every year for the next 5 years, which is quite a big ask. You know, at the minute, I think we average about 150,000, 200,000 a year. So it's a huge increase. But, you know, doing that would create jobs. You know, it would boost business, which seems to be what they want to do. You know, they want to raise more money, to have more money to tax by creating more jobs and more growth, and you know that would be a great way to do that, and I think would garner a lot of support from not only, you know, younger people and people trying to get on the housing ladder, but also I think increasingly you know, older people are realizing my kids can't get on the housing ladder, and it's I think it's a policy that increasingly will you know, garner more and more support from kind of across the board, really.
Well, interestingly, on the news of the election results, share prices in house builders went up. So maybe that's on what Labour have been saying about planning and building houses.
Yeah, I mean, Labour have been making some, you know, they've talked a lot about housing. They've said that they're obviously going to build all these homes. They're going to do it, they say, by sorting out the planning system. Now, this is something that is always, almost every single election. I mean, planning, it sounds like quite a boring issue, doesn't it? You know, planning applications, planning departments. But it is actually really important because, you know, every home that is built needs to get approved. And if that's happening either too slowly or that's not happening, you know, in situations where it maybe should happen, you know, we all hear about sort of NIMBYs and people, you know, managing to badger local councils into turning things down when there isn't necessarily a good reason to. And Labour have talked about the Green Belt. They've said, you know, we will possibly allow more housing to be built on the Green Belt. They've talked about something called the Grey Belt, which is essentially, from what I can, a kind of ugly Green Belt.
Oh, right.
So it's not, it's not, you know, beautiful kind of bucolic hills that are going to be sort of tarmacked over and houses put on, but it's, I don't know, bits of grass behind existing housing. It's stuff that's, you know, right, not necessarily of any kind of huge value to anyone. That's obviously going to be sort of difficult to get through, but that's the agenda. And it seems that as house builder shares have gone up, you know, there is some confidence that more houses will get built. But the difficulty is, you know, we talk about the Labour Party building houses. Political parties don't build houses. It's house builders that build houses, and they're private companies with their own agenda. And the key, I think, will be convincing them that it's a good idea to build more, because obviously house builders will only build as many houses they think they can sell. If they build many, many more houses, and that could bring the value of the houses that they're building down, because there'll be too many of them, supply and demand, you know, it makes no economic sense for them to do. So they'll need to be, that will need to be addressed in order for this sort of building bonanza to go on.
What a quandary. Lee Boyce, housing's been taken, so...
Just on the housing front, though, quickly, it's very difficult to come out and say, it's very easy to come out and say we're going to build 300,000 homes a year. Practically speaking, it's not as easy as that. And we've seen that promise time and time again. What's the quality of those homes going to be like? Yeah, you know, are they going to be good enough for what we need? Is it going to be the right kind of housing stock? Are they going to build the right kind of infrastructure where they're constantly sprawling out? So I think all of those things need to be answered. So, talking about taxes, they've said that they're not going to raise income tax, national insurance, VAT, corporation tax. Now, income tax for me is a biggie in there. People are getting dragged into becoming higher rate taxpayers. And I think that's why when people were listening to the leader debates, for example, very difficult to sit there listening to Rishi Sunak saying Labour are going to cost us X amount, you know, £2,000 or whatever it was per family that got debunked and actually said, actually, that's not right. Very hard to listen to him when he was a former chancellor, then prime minister, then there's going to be an extra something like 3 million higher rate taxpayers because of the frozen income tax ban until 2028. So I think that is something that possibly needs to get looked at. I started jotting down things where I thought there were priorities, and I've ran out of space on a piece of paper.
Really?
Very, very difficult. Yeah, I started going into all sorts. But, you know, things like pensions, state pension increases. They've pledged to keep the triple lock, but pensions are coming into that point now where they are more and more facing tax bills. The Tories thought they'd solved that with the triple lock plus, which didn't really catch on in terms of excitement levels. Are we going to see council tax rises continuously and continuously and continuously? Well, there's lots of rumours that, you know, potentially that's going to go up even more. And I think lots of people are struggling with council tax bills. IHT, I mean, that is something that is constant up for reform. Inheritance tax, it's kind of loathed tax. Will that get fixed? Will there be stuff going on? I think also we need to inject a bit of positivity into Britain. You know, we are, you know, we need to have more apprenticeships, more things going on for younger people to get a next generation of skill makers, you know, skills and creative things. So I see it in two camps, really, the sort of creative industries and the manufacturing industries. This country has a great manufacturing history. I feel some of that started to get eroded away a bit. And I'd like to see a bit of a push going towards more positivity around that area. And I think, lastly, how do we stop a kind of talent drain that I feel that's happening in this country in a way? Lots of people are looking at how much they're getting taxed and they're getting their head turned by countries, especially those in the Middle East, where they can basically go and earn a lot more money because it's tax-free. So where do we fix all of those problems? And that's just for starters. I mean, I've run out of breath just spitting all of that out. But
that's a big priority list there, isn't
I would not want to be Prime Minister. No, definitely
But I do think it's interesting you said about the positivity, because I was driving here. I was thinking, God, I remember when Tony Blair came in, and it was a real mood. It was Great Britain, you know, really great. And the front covers of magazines, it was all exciting. And I'm not getting that feeling now, but it would be great if we could have a feeling of Great Britain again. And I'd say that not as a kind of raging nationalist thing, but it's just as positive about the
Make
mood.
Britain great again. You
know, yeah, Donald Trump, yeah, exactly. Simon, your view, what priority, has Lee left you any, to be fair, but would you have?
Yes, I have could come up with some priorities that haven't been mentioned. But first of all, I would suggest a dose of honesty.
Okay.
Right? So, for example, Labour's manifesto, housing. They're going to build 300,000 houses a year, mm-hmm. right? As Helen pointed out, problem is political parties don't build houses. House builders build houses. And you don't need to be a amazing detective to go through the house builders' results from the last year and understand why we haven't built building many houses over the last year to 18 months, because they've all put it in their results that they put out to the stock market, where they have basically said, yeah, we're building at a slower rate to protect our profits because mortgage rates are high, so people aren't buying, and in order to protect the prices, they're building less houses. So that's why we've been building less houses. And also, if you look at, you know, these statistics can be used in a very selective manner. Why did house building crash so much in 2020, for example, and, you know, not rebound that quickly in 2021? It's like, COVID, lockdowns, that kind of thing. So actually, we have been building, you know, we haven't built that many houses, but we haven't built as few houses as is sometimes suggested as a political weapon. And convincing those house builders to build more houses is a good thing. But how are you going to do it? And why are those share prices rising? Those share prices are rising because people are looking at it and going, these big house builders. And one of the problems we have is that the house building has been concentrated into a very small number of large house builders now. There's much less small builders. They're looking at it going, well, this is possibly a bit of a charter for them to make out like bandits. Continue to sell substandard homes at premium prices, because as Helen pointed out, new homes are sold at a premium price to secondhand homes. There's some very good work that's been done on this, that building more houses doesn't bring the prices down. What you need to build is houses that are at a lower price. And I always said Help to Buy, the worst thing about the Help to Buy equity loan scheme was you were lending people 25% interest free to buy the home, so you were facilitating prices going up. They should have lent that money to the house builders, because that would have reduced the cost of building the homes, so they could have sold them to people for a lower price. And then you come onto the problem of where you're going to build these homes. Well, are you just going to keep building out on the fields around towns in that kind of sprawl, which is what people don't want? Or is there a better way of doing it? Can you build in a kind of hub and spoke way, so you have spokes of the countryside coming in? Because actually the people who are impacted by new homes, it's not just the people whose garden's back onto a field, right? It's the people who are pushed further away from the countryside. So now they used to be able to walk 5 minutes to the countryside. Now they have to walk 15 minutes to the countryside. And where does the uplift in value from that land go to? Well, it goes to the landowner, goes to the farmer who sold the fields. And then at the stroke of a planner's pen, they get lottery-style winning money. Is that right? Or should that money be going back into the local community? These are all things that we need to tackle. And then also, is this a problem everywhere in the country? Not necessarily. It's a problem in parts of the country more than it is in others. Why is it a problem? Because of the economic imbalance in our country, where if you look at the UK, the problem is you've got London and then you've got everywhere else. We don't have the same strength of second, third, fourth, fifth cities that you have in other European countries. Manchester, for example, is doing great. Birmingham's doing great. But the interconnectivity in the Midlands and the North is absolutely terrible. So maybe if you connect those places up a bit more, you can get people up there. Or maybe we completely squandered the benefit of the COVID working from home thing. And maybe actually the way to level up is, instead of actually sending the people to go work there, you just encourage people to be able to work there without necessarily having to move. And then you start to get the increased prosperity. And then people go, do you know what, actually, I am going to move there because I quite like going into the office and seeing the people that I work with. So I think there needs to be a dose of honesty rather than just this simple, well, we're going to build more houses thing. The other thing I think we should look at is, what are we good at in this country? And what can we try to capitalize on? we are actually genuinely pretty good at the green energy stuff. We are good at digital stuff. Mm-hmm. We are good at financial services. I know people don't want to hear that. I know there's lots of people who want to go back to some sort of romanticized version of our industrial past, but that's not what we're good at anymore. But we are really good at kind of high-tech engineering. We are really good at stuff around high-tech motoring, like the whole F1 industry and the way you've got the F1 corridor that runs up through the Midlands. We should look at things like that and go, right, how can we capitalise on those things?
And how do we stop, as Lee pointed out, the skills drain?
I mean, fundamentally, you look at things that you're good at and then you try and do more of them and you try and capitalise on them rather than going, do you know what, I know how we'll get growth. Houses. Because that hasn't been the thing that's been undermining the economy for the last 30 years, our reliance on the property market to drive it. And then also, I think, for Rachel Reeves, I think this is an amazing opportunity to start with a clean slate. If I was Rachel Reeves, I would, in my first budget, I would rip up all of the tax traps, the 60% tax rate, the tax traps, the things that mean those people Lee was talking about feel so aggrieved that they're paying huge amounts of tax, but they're also getting treated very unfairly. And I would make the tax system much fairer, and so you could start afresh, clean slate, move on, and then maybe you wouldn't find people who are paying the 45p tax rate and things like that quite so upset about it. And this is also somewhere where I think that Labour is potentially shooting itself in the foot with this VAT on private school fees thing, because I don't think it'll actually raise that much money. It just looks a little bit like the politics of envy.
That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Rob Morgan of Charles Stanley Direct for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Rob, a thumping Labour election victory. Welcome to the podcast this week.
Thanks, Simon. Yes, not really any ripples to report in financial markets, though. I think with that dominant Labour victory very well anticipated, we've got the share markets and the pound very marginally higher on the day, so nothing really to report. And markets generally view the result as quite benign. Following a decade of kind of political shocks and a merry-go-round, really, of different Conservative prime ministers, some political stability, at least, has been broadly welcomed. Let's not forget as well that the potential stability is in contrast to the volatility that we might see elsewhere, especially in the run-up to the US presidential elections in November. Also, there's considerable uncertainty in France right now, of course. So the UK could be, relatively speaking, a bit of a haven from that perspective. And of course, the Labour Party's been making some of the right noises for business and for markets generally as well. And the manifesto emphasised the party's plan to kickstart economic growth, invest in the UK's infrastructure and drive wider wealth creation. So that's a broad positive for markets if it can indeed deliver on those things. That said, it could be just a brief sort of honeymoon if it doesn't start delivering on those campaign pledges quite quickly. And it does have to grapple with the tricky state of the nation's finances, with the adverse market reaction to the Truss Quartet mini budget just a couple of years ago still fresh in the memory. So Labour will be really keen to ensure the market stays on side while aiming to upgrade public services and improve productivity and try and get the economy growing more quickly. It's not going to be easy, but some of the things that they may look at is reducing friction at the border with the EU, liberalising planning laws and attracting that long-term capital that's needed for investment. And get those things right, and that's a positive for growth and for UK markets, but a lot of hurdles to overcome in doing those things.
So that's the UK's finances. Our personal finances are obviously a major concern for many people. What are the main personal finance elements for people to look out for with this new Labour government?
Yes, I mean, some things we've already seen ruled out, of course, as pre-election promises. So no rises to the rates of income tax or national insurance or VAT, and no rise in corporation tax. Labour's also committed to the state pension triple lock, of course. And other things we do know are ruled in, so VAT on private schools being a very important one there. But the fact remains that at some point the new government might need to raise more money to fulfil its plans, depending on how ambitious they decide to be, and that might mean some changes beyond those that we know about. And I think some of the ones that we do need to look out for, pensions, certainly Labour has pledged to undertake a review of the pension and retirement landscape, and we don't know what that might bring exactly, but issues around tax relief, the amount of tax-free cash you can take from pension, and especially I think probably the ability to pass pensions on inheritance tax-free. Those are the things that are probably going to be under the spotlight. On ISAs, Labour has signalled it might like to simplify the ISA landscape, but it's also said that it might quite like the idea of the British ISA, which is probably something that stands at odds with the idea of simplification. And finally, what increasing numbers of people are concerned about is increases to capital taxes, so inheritance tax and capital gains tax. Labour manifesto was silent on the matter of inheritance tax, and we might have to wait to the budget in October, I think, probably, to see if any changes might be afoot there. On CGT, Labour's said it has no plans to change CGT rates, although that doesn't exactly rule it out. And again, it's a case of watch this space. It might be a case that the rates of tax don't change, but some of the reliefs or exemptions do. So it'll be a case of staying alert to those details and subtleties as we go along. So overall, a time to be on greater alert in terms of personal finances.
Rob, thank you very much.
Thanks, Simon.
Welcome back. Before we delve into what a Labour government means for our money, I want to take this opportunity to take a look at the Conservative legacy. What they got right, what opportunities they missed, perhaps what they did wrong in terms of our finances, obviously. Lee, you had a chat with Dave Fishwick. Listen to last week's podcast, the Bank of Dave fame, obviously. And what came up was levelling up. And Simon was mentioning there about the levelling up and the North, etc., and the Midlands. But that's one area. And I don't want to just focus on the missed opportunities. There must be some things that you think that over the last 14 years, the Conservatives have got right. What would you pick out, Lee?
That's a really, really difficult question.
Sorry. I mean, you can take a moment. I can ask someone else.
No, you're ready to go? It's fine. I mean, I think let's, before we go back over the last 14 years, let's talk about the last 5 years. And the Boris Johnson, then, you know, all of the instability of having numerous prime ministers, the Liz Truss madness and all of that. Right in there, thumping, not that long after Mr. Johnson came into power, was the pandemic. Now, there's lots that the Conservative Party got wrong about the pandemic, but there's actually lots that it kind of got right, and it did support people through things like furlough schemes. You could even argue that some of the business support potentially was a little bit too generous, and, you know, it all got a bit fraught and a bit mad, you know, how that money was dished out. But they supported people through that, and obviously there was a lot of waste also from all the controversies that I'm not going to delve into, but they tried to do right by people. But what's happened since then is we are getting taxed to the hill. So, you know, they could have basically been less taxy, and then we might have been talking about a different a little bit, you know, we could have been talking about a different outcome. Going further back than that, I think that we're talking about the Cameron era and George Osborne. There's things that they bought in.
It's a lifetime ago.
It does.
It?
I mean, that's why when you asked me, I was kind of trying to stretch my mind back to it's been such an awful long time that we've had Conservatives in power. My whole working career here at This Is Money, pretty much. You know, we've become, I would say, arguably some of the tax breaks about the things. You know, I love an ISA. And they ramped up the ISA allowances a fair while ago now. And they've started to see the benefit of that. Lots of people are squirreling away money tax-free. I did a story this week, actually, about just how much has poured into cash ISAs, for example, since January 2023. Something like £73.5 billion that people are trying to sort away from the tax ban, essentially. And lots of people emailed me, and I read in the comments in there, people are worried that that's one area that Labour might come and try and bite, you know, people's tax-free allowances. So I feel like George Osborne was on the side of savers. I feel like he tried to build up a kind of legacy of people saving. But we're historically a country that's not great at saving. And so you could argue that there's been some of that. You can talk about things like, I think we always go into this trap about properties and house prices. But fundamentally, if you've been on a housing ladder since 2010, your house has probably grown in value quite a lot. But what, you know, is that a success? Well, not really, because there's lots of people that don't own a home that want to buy a home and seeing house prices are really high. Mm. So, you know, that's a kind of another
legacy. If you're going to sell, you're just going to find other houses that are just as expensive. So
it's true. Yeah, exactly.
Unless you move to the other side of the country.
Well, there we go. So, you know, it's really hard. I think it's such a kind of hard one to sort of pick into. Mm. I don't know where else I'm trying to... You've kind of stumped me there. I reckon Simon will have something else.
Income tax threshold, that's almost doubled, hasn't it? I'm trying to think of some positives here that, you know...
In the early years, under the sort of Cameron, Osborne, also don't forget the Lib Dems, they were part of that.
Yep.
Yeah, they dramatically raised the personal allowance. And that was a really good thing to have done. Mm. And I got pulled up on this actually by a podcast listener who said, don't forget, that was a Lib Dem policy. And it's true. I believe that actually may have emerged from the Lib Dems, but they all put it in place and they all did it. The pension freedom stuff, that was really good. Stopping people having to buy annuities, which were very poor value and very restrictive for people, and that has been a major positive. And actually there were lots of concerns about it. Our very own Steve Webb said that he was not concerned about it, and I believe that he has proved to be right. But actually a major achievement, if we're looking for achievements by the Tory party, education, school age education, schools are much better now than they were when they took over. I have some actual facts to back that up. England is now the best in the West when it comes to reading at primary school age, according to one of the rankings. When it comes to maths, English students have improved compared with their European peers. They do obviously fall behind those in Asia. And also, I think you just have to look at some of our schools in our big cities, you know, particularly the schools in London, are now immeasurably better than they were, you know, 14 years ago. And if you think that education is important, then what they have achieved in school age education is quite impressive. And they've had to rattle a few cages to do it. And if there's any teachers listening to this, they are probably cursing me because most teachers cannot stand the Tories. You know, they cannot stand Michael Gove when he was doing this stuff. And there are lots of complaints about this stuff. But the data appears to show, and the experiences of many people appears to show, that actually our school education system has got substantially better.
Helen, hindsight is a beautiful thing, isn't it? But is there anything that, looking back, the Conservatives could have done differently, you would like them to do differently, that they did well?
Actually, when Simon was just talking about schools, I was thinking, yes, schools have got much better. What's got much worse is universities, and in particular student loans. So, you know, this was way back under the coalition government, but that was when student fees went up to £9,000 a year, a huge rise. And obviously, in the last few years, the repayments are partly sort of interest linked. So the amount graduates are repaying has absolutely snowballed. The time when you repay and the salary limits for repaying have also got sort of less generous. So, you know, we quite regularly get emails from readers saying, you know, I took this loan out when I was 18. I had no idea really how it worked or what I was signing up for. And people were saying, oh, it'll be fine. You know, it's a graduate tax. And I think increasingly people are now getting to the stage where we pay, you know, early, mid-20s, thinking, oh, God, what have I done? And I do think that kind of impact is just kind of coming through. And perhaps, you know, that those will be people who are maybe voting for the first or second time this election. And you know, probably that's had an impact, because I think that has been really sort of damaging for young people.
So, OK, that's the Conservatives. We'll leave them to one side, as the country has decided to do. And we're going to move forward with a new Labour government. But what does it mean for our personal finances? Obviously, only a couple of hours in the job. But what do we know so far? So, our personal finances. Simon, you've spoken a lot about taxes. Everybody, I think, has mentioned it today on this podcast. But what will go up? What are we expecting? What will stay the same? What will change?
Right. So, the Labour Party has promised not to raise the rates of income tax, national insurance, VAT, and to cap the rate of corporation tax at 25%, which means that it won't go up. Promising to not raise the rates of tax is not the same as not raising taxes on people, because we have income tax thresholds that are frozen. People's wages go up, hopefully at least with inflation, hopefully a bit more. And we've seen major fiscal drag. And what it does is it pulls your wages at the lower end into tax. So basically, just for you to stand still, you need your wages to go up by a certain amount. And if the tax threshold doesn't move up, then you get pulled out. It has moved many, 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 many more people into higher rate, 40% tax. And also the 45p tax band has been dragged down from £150,000 to £125,000. At the same time as some of those bits in the system that catch people out, in particular the 60% tax, which occurs when people have their personal allowance removed between £100,000 and £125,000, has remained at exactly the same level. So we are taxing people more. And Labour have given every indication that they intend to stick by this.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, if I was Rachel Reeves, I'd rip this one up. I'd say, from now on, tax bans moving up with inflation, because actually it won't be that expensive because inflation's back to 2%. Would have been really quite expensive with inflation at 10%, and that's when the government really cashed in on this one. But with inflation at 2%, probably be okay. So the question is then, which taxes are they going to put up instead? If they can't do that, the IFS has said, basically, manifesto doesn't add up. They're going to have to either cut spending, which is unpalatable to most people and certainly unpalatable to many Labour supporters, or they're going to have to raise taxes. So then it's what taxes are they going to raise? There's this idea of a wealth tax. We spoke about this the other week. Wealth taxes are really difficult to impose on people because most countries don't have them. And the reason they don't have them is they don't work. They lead to outcomes that, you know, it could be like I had to sell my home in order to pay the wealth tax. You know, I had to raise my pension in order to pay the wealth tax, because ultimately you can say you're taxing wealth, but people need to pay it out of their income unless they're going to cash in some of their wealth to pay it. So you start taxing wealth when wealth moves.
Mm.
And the taxes that we have when wealth moves are capital gains tax, which is when people make a profit on assets they sell, shares, property, etc. And the capital gains tax allowance has been hacked back substantially by Jeremy Hunt from £12,300 to just £3,000. So there's the talk of raising rates to align them with income tax. Could that happen? Labour has no plans to raise capital gains tax. That's not the same as not saying you're not going to do it. Inheritance tax, again, wealth moves, someone dies, it gets passed on. Inheritance tax is pretty high. It's 40%. Could they raise the rate on that? I don't know. But they could remove some of the exemptions. And there's some pretty hefty exemptions that very rich people use. Agricultural land, passes on businesses, things like that. Could they tinker with the 7-year rule? I mean, that would be very controversial. You know, stopping people giving the money away while they're still alive. Could they switch it around so that you get taxed at income tax rates on the money you're given rather than the estate being taxed? You never know. There are things they could do. Pensions, pension tax relief. This is one that's potentially being eyed up. Is it fair that higher earners get more pension tax relief than lower earners? It is if you look at the principle that you invest into your pension out of untaxed income, and therefore if you pay a higher tax rate, you need to get a bit more back to put you back to where you were. But it's very easy to paint that the other way around and go, we should give more pension tax relief to lower earners, which would actually be a quite convenient way via the back door of cutting down on stuff. Then council tax, that's a big one. We're well due a revaluation. But how do you do the revaluation? You know, if you were going to do it in the fairest way, you would take every single area, divide it up into, say, 10 bands of the most expensive and the cheapest properties in every area, and then you would set it and do it that way. But also what you wouldn't do is take all the money from councils, send it to the government, and then the government divvies it up and gives it back to councils in a totally different proportion to the way that it came in. It's a very difficult tax to deal with. And if you just targeted the very highest value homes, would you bring in enough money? So is that just going to end up hitting people who live in more expensive homes who are already actually paying quite a lot of council tax and end up paying much more? These are all the questions that, you know, we need the answers to, and we will find out the answers to. I would suspect that possibly Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves' main objective for the time being, though, is not to massively rock the boat.
Yeah, I don't think that works that well. I do want to do one quick question about the corporation tax. Obviously, they say a cap at 25%, but not everyone pays 25%. Those who earn below £250,000 will pay a range between 19 and 25. By saying they'll cap it at 25, Simon's smiling at me there. Does that mean those poor people who earn like less than £250,000, the hard-working backbone of Britain, We'll also get that. See their corporation tax rise, maybe? Simon's smiling.
I'm smiling because I think you pay corporation tax.
I mean, this is not a needs thing here.
You know, you might be making more than a quarter of a million, but I'm not sure you are.
Simon, if I was making more than a quarter, I wouldn't be asking this question, that's for sure.
But yeah, there is a risk that they put your tax up, I think.
Right.
There is a potential that they do go after something like that. Also, the other thing is on the capital gains tax thing. If you were to change capital gains tax and equalise the rates with income tax, it would hit small investors very, very hard. But the other people who would hit is people who've built up businesses and are selling the businesses. Do you remove the entrepreneurs' relief that exists? You could cash in that way. But that would be very, very unpopular, again, with the people who ultimately are highly productive and driving the economy, the people going out there taking risks, building businesses, and who have then run that business and built it up for long enough that they eventually cash in. You know, they could see a big tax hit if capital gains tax was shaken up.
Right, well, that's taxes. Helen, what else have we got in there? You know, you mentioned houses there, so mortgages, borrowers, property, savers, investors, consumer stuff. Let's go with mortgages first, though.
Yes, I mean, it's surprising, actually, that we've got so far through this podcast without mentioning the mini-budget yet. Obviously, that was a huge issue for the election. You know, it was brought up so many times. Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng and crush the economy, put up mortgage rates. Labour actually said in its manifesto that it will keep mortgage rates low. I have no idea how it is. I mean, they're not low, so it can't keep them low because they're not.
Has anybody ever put out a manifesto saying that they're going to make mortgage rates go up?
Well, no. But they don't really have any lever on that as far as I can see. I mean, it's all down to the Bank of England, and, you know, luckily for them, things are kind of heading in hopefully the right direction inflation-wise. You know, they've got a few schemes, but nothing that's going to hugely help people. I think they're continuing the mortgage guarantee scheme, which is this scheme that Tories came up with that helps sort of encourages banks to lend people 5% mortgages. Then that scheme isn't actually used by very many people, so that's not that much use. They've come up with a kind of help to buy alternative as well called, I think, Freedom to Buy, but they haven't come up with many details on it. It's all kind of detail light on that front, I suppose.
Lee?
I was just going to say, on the mortgages front, actually the last week and a half, we've seen some big banks start to cut rates again. That suggests that they're thinking that interest rates are going to start potentially coming down, which we've talked about, feels like, endlessly for the last few months. I mean, that's more, you know, what controls what's going on. Very hard to come out and manipulate the mortgage market to bring rates down. I mean, it's very easy to make it go the other way, as Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng showed us in the mini budget. But it feels like things are stepping in the right direction in terms of things like mortgage rates. In terms of what else is in the manifesto, from a sort of consumer point of view, they're talking about creating Great British Energy, which will be funded by windfall taxes on the big energy companies. It's saying that it will invest billions of pounds in clean, homegrown energy, which it hopes will boost jobs. Whether that works, again, stepping in as a kind of government-led, you know, against private companies, it's not the easiest thing to do. And whether that gets off the ground, well, proof will be in the pudding, of course. They're talking, I think one of the key things here, as I mentioned earlier, is they're planning to push ahead with the freeze on income tax thresholds until 2028. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be no change in that. The IFS estimates that's the equivalent of putting income tax up by 6p, which is not great. They've talked about minimum wage and making it a genuine living wage. I feel like the living wage has been probably something of a positive from the Conservative Party, actually, if we were talking about positives from the last 14 years. But they're talking about removing age bans, so all adults are entitled to the same minimum wage, which would mean a pay rise for quite a few younger people. I think motoring's going to be a very interesting topic in the next 6 to 12 months. We've got the fuel duty freeze, it's been frozen and frozen and frozen again. And in fact, there was a cut. But it's frozen until March 2025. If that gets unfrozen and there's then the 5p hike in fuel duty, that'll be at least another 50 quid a year motorists are going to have to spend on fuel. Whether they do that or not, we're unclear at the moment. One thing that they have been vocal about, though, is pushing the ban on new petrol diesel cars forward, bringing it back to the original 2030. Yeah. after the Conservative pushed it back to 2035, it feels like we are rolling around to 2030 pretty quickly. Obviously, manufacturers are investing heavily in EVs, but there's been a real blip in consumer confidence. In if you're buying a new car at the moment, it feels like EVs have gone right down back down the pecking order. I think part of that is price point. I think that drivers are unwilling to pay some of the astronomical sums for, you know, quite basic entry level EVs. I don't think range anxiety is much of a thing anymore. Technology has improved, but it's going to take something massive to convince more of the general public to buy electric cars. I don't know whether bringing this, it's been a lot of flip-flopping around on dates, and it's, I think it's actually unfair on manufacturers trying to figure out the landscape and what's going on. So all of those things are interesting. And again, I'll go back to pensions and talking about the lifetime allowance. You know, that was, they were very vocal about that before, but of course this manifesto, there's no mention of it. There's no mention of it whatsoever. So it was withdrawn because we were seeing things like experienced doctors who were breaching
pensions. Yeah, so imagine you can save for your pension through your lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. So we were seeing lots of experience. It really hit the NHS, actually. So doctors, but other people as well, not just solely doctors. Lots of people just taking early retirement because they couldn't save any more into their pension. And it was causing a headache. I mean, to be honest, the whole healthcare part of this country has gone backwards, I would say. I mean, trying to get a GP appointment is incredibly difficult, I would say. There's lots of holes in the bucket that need filling, I think, before we just pour a load of money in the top, which is actually what Dave was saying last week to me. You know, there's a lot of waste that goes on. How do you fix all that without throwing loads of money at it? I don't know the answer, Georgie. So this is what I was going back to right at the start. The inbox is just absolutely blown. Keir Starmer's got his new keirstarmer@pm.co.uk email address, and I'm telling you, that inbox already is unmanageable. Packed. I mean, I don't know where you start with it all. But actually, I do know where you start with it all, and it is about stability. It's completely about stability. You think about from how quickly time goes, and from here to Christmas, I think it's essentially not rocking the boat, not doing crazy things, sticking on a course, sticking to your principles. And listen, I'll support whoever is in charge of this country from day one, as in I want the best for this country, and it doesn't matter where your political stripes lie. I think it's important to get behind. It's just, you know, obviously there'll be plenty of scrutiny over the coming months and years by us, by other people in the media, by the general public, and we'll see what can be delivered off of what's in the manifesto, and crucially, all of the things that were left off of it.
Hear, hear, Lee. Looking forward then, Simon, you mentioned there about VAT for schools. We've talked about inheritance tax, potential income tax, all sorts of changes, corporation tax, CGT, everything. How can you prepare your finances for what may or may not be coming down the line, but we think might be?
Well, it's always difficult to prepare your finances for something that you're not quite sure is going to happen and that you're speculating on. And I would advise people not to make rash and potentially expensive decisions based on speculation. We know what Labour have told us, and we can work on the basis that they'll probably follow that. What we don't know, as we said, is what they haven't told us, but that is pure speculation. So be careful there. You know, don't be suddenly pulling loads of money out of your pension or things like that. Just do the kind of steady, sensible stuff that you would normally do. Don't be doing a pat. If you think there's going to be Starmageddon, right, don't run for the hills. Don't be Starmageddon out of here, okay?
Simon.
Just because it might not happen. And you could end up costing yourself a load more money. It's like the whole telling people not to panic sell their investments after the market has fallen. But it is a good opportunity to take a look at your finances and go, am I doing all of the right things here? You know, can I do anything to get ahead of the game and sort my mortgage if my mortgage is up for renewal? You know, or if I'm in a position where I'm a first-time buyer, do I want to be looking at maybe making my move right now? Does it work out for me right now? You know, am I using my ISA properly? Have I got all of my money going into my ISA rather than money sitting there being taxed in tax savings accounts? Am I paying money enough into my pension? Is my pension on track? Have I got my rainy day pot sorted? And once I've got my rainy day pot sorted, am I then investing my money over and above that? Am I doing things in the most tax efficient way? And also, you know, what am I doing to help protect my wealth and grow it? And am I doing my job on that rather than worrying about what someone else may or may not do? Can I say one other thing? So from the Lambert perspective, I have absolutely no doubt that this Starmer government will lead to the Lambert family paying more tax.
Right.
Right. And I already pay an eye-watering amount of tax. But I am in a very fortunate position where I have a good job that pays me well. I'm not on mega bucks. I'm not at risk of that corporation tax. Like we were talking about. And I don't pay corporation tax, I pay income tax. But if at the end of this 5 years, it leaves the country in a better place for my children, then okay, I'm willing to pay that money. But the deal is, I want this country to be a better place in 5 years' time. And if I just end up having a load of money taken off me and the country ends up being a worse place in 5 years' time, I'm not going to be very happy about it.
Yeah.
And I think that that is the general vibe of quite a lot of people in this scenario. And I also think that the government needs to come out and say, look, we can lay the groundwork for, you know, success and for the country to get ahead, but it's you lot, businesses, people, individuals who actually achieve that. It's not going to be Keir Starmer and the, what is it, 400 odd members of the Labour Party. They're not actually going to achieve the prosperity that Britain needs. It's all of us who are going to achieve that.
Which goes back to what you said right at the start, is honesty, Simon. It starts there. Right. That is it. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. If you have any comments or questions for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon.
You can email us on our new email address at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk.
No.
You can tweet us at thisismoney and come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all podcasts past and join in the debate and read comments and tell us what you think.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
I'm Lisa Kaplan from Charles Stanley Direct. I've spent 15 years helping people understand their finances with clear, jargon-free language. People often ask me whether they have enough to retire, what to do about inheritance tax, or how best to invest. Often, it's a simple question that one of my expert team can answer straight away, and we would love to help you too. Contact us for a free 15-minute chat at coaching@charles-stanley.co.uk. Investment involves risk.